Her body didn't loosen, but she was able to sit there, endure the fire until it dimmed to embers, and then went out entirely. She didn't know why she found herself on the verge of tears as the cinders smoldered. Didn't know why the rush of pride that filled her chest made her want to laugh and whoop and dance around the room. She hadn't done anything more than sit by a fire, but she had sat, stayed. She had not failed. She had faced it and survived. She might not have saved the world or led armies, but she had made this small, initial step. Nesta wiped at her eyes, and when she looked around her quiet room, she startled to find a trail of evergreen twigs leading to her now open door. Cocking a brow, she rose. "What's all this about?" she asked the house, following the trail it had left. Down the hall, along the stairs, all the way down to the library itself. "Where are we going?" Nesta asked the warm air. Mercifully, even the night owls amongst the priestesses had gone to sleep, leaving no one to see her hurrying after the trail of branches. Around all the levels of the library they twined, deeper and deeper, until they reached the seventh level. Nesta drew up short as the trail stopped at the edge of the wall of darkness. A light flickered beyond it. Several lights, as if to say, "Come, don't be afraid." So Nesta sucked in a breath as she stepped into the gloom. Little tea lights wended into a familiar darkness. She and Feyre had once ventured down here, had faced horrors here. No evidence remained of that day, only the firelit dimness. The candles leading her to the lowest levels of the library, to the pit itself. Nesta followed them, spiraling to the bottom of the pit, where one small lantern glowed, faintly illuminating the rows of books, veiled in permanent shadow around it. Heart racing, Nesta lifted the lantern in one hand and gazed at the darkness, untouched by the light from the library high, high above. The heart of the world, of existence, of self. The heart of the house. This, her fingers tightened on the lantern. This darkness is your heart. As if in answer, the house laid a little evergreen sprig at her feet. A winter solstice present for me. She could have sworn a warm hand brushed her neck in answer. But your darkness, wonder softened her voice. You were trying to show me, show others who you are down deep, what haunts you. You were trying to show them all those dark, broken pieces, because the priestesses and Emery and I, we're the same as you. Her throat constricted at what the house had gifted her, this knowledge. She lifted the lantern higher and blew out its flame, let the darkness sweep in, embraced it. "I'm not afraid," she whispered into it. "You are my friend and my home. Thank you for sharing this with me." Again, Nesta could have sworn that phantom touch caressed her neck, her cheek, her brow. "Happy solstice," she said, into the beautiful, fractured darkness. Chapter 57. Cassian normally looked forward to winter solstice for a host of reasons, starting with the usual 3 days of drinking with his family, and ending with the riotous fun of his annual snowball fight with his brothers, followed by a steam in the birchin and more drinking, usually until all three of them had passed out in variously stupid positions. One year he'd awoken wearing a blonde wig and nothing but an evergreen garland around his groin, like a loincloth. It had itched and scratched awfully, though it was nothing compared to his pounding hangover. He supposed at its root he loved the winter solstice because it was uninterrupted time with the people he treasured most. This year, just as it had last year, it filled him with nothing but churning acid. The Court of Nightmares was decorated, as it usually was, adorned for the celebration that lasted 3 whole days surrounding the longest night of the year. Each night held a different ball, and at the first of them, Nesta would dance with Eris. Tonight, in a matter of moments. He'd had a month to prepare for this, a month of being in Nesta's bed, or at least fucking her in it. The cauldron knew she hadn't ever asked him to stay after he pulled out of her. He stood at the foot of the black dais, staring out at the glittering throng with a face that promised death. Az stood on the other side of the dais, wearing a similar expression. Each and every one of the people here could fucking burn in hell, starting with Kier, at the head of the gathered crowd, ending with Eris, standing proud and tall, wearing night court black beside him. More stood by Feyre's and Rhysand's thrones, representing them until they arrived. The entire throne room was bedecked in black candles, evergreen wreaths and garlands, and holly berries. The twin banquet tables flanking either side of the massive space overflowed with food, but it was forbidden to all until Feyre and Rhys allowed it. He'd lightened some of his night-triumphant demeanor with the people of the Hewn City lately, but not by much. Cassian didn't envy Rhys his juggling act. They couldn't isolate Kier, not if they were to need his Darkbringers again. Hence the nicer tone. But they couldn't let him forget the ass-kicking he'd receive if he stepped out of line. Hence the only slightly nicer tone. They'd heard nothing of the crown, nothing from Briallen. She had not come for the trove. Cassian wasn't stupid enough to believe it was over. None of them were. The towering doors to the throne room at last yawned open. Dark power rumbled through the mountain, warning of their approach. The mountain sang with it. Everyone turned as the High Lord and High Lady appeared, crowned and garbed in black. Rhys looked his usual handsome self, but Feyre, the room gasped. Tonight also served another purpose, to tell the world of Feyre's pregnancy. She wore a dress of sparkling black panels, much like the one she'd first worn here, and it did nothing to hide her swelling belly. No, it showed off her pregnant womb, gleaming in the candlelight. Rhys's face was a portrait of smug male pride. Cassian knew he'd shred anyone who so much as blinked wrong at Feyre into a million bloody ribbons. Indeed, cold violence rippled off Rhys as they walked toward the dais, Feyre's baby-rich scent filling the air. He'd let everyone here smell it, further confirming that she was with child. Feyre might as well have been a goddess of old, crowned and glowing, her belly swollen with life. Her serene face was lovely, and her full red lips parted in a smile at Rhys as they aimed for their thrones. Kier looked torn between anger and shock. Eris's face was carefully neutral. Motion at the back of the room tugged Cassian's stare from his enemies, and then both sisters wore black. Both walked behind Rhys and Feyre, a silent indicator that they were part of the royal family, had mighty powers of their own. They'd planned it that way, wanting Eris to see for himself how valuable Nesta was. Cassian wondered if Elaine and Nesta had broken their silence while waiting for their entrance. They hadn't spoken to each other for months now. Elaine, in black, was ridiculous. Yes, she was beautiful, but the color of her long-sleeved modest gown leached the brightness from her face. It wore her rather than the other way around, and he knew the cruelty of the hewn city troubled her. But she hadn't hesitated to come. When Feyre had offered to let her remain home, Elaine had squared her shoulders and declared that she was part of this court and would do whatever was needed. So Elaine had let her golden brown hair down tonight and pinned it back with twin combs of pearl. He'd never once in the 2 years he'd known her found Elaine to be plain. But wearing black, no matter how much she claimed to be part of this court, it sucked the life from her. Nesta, in night court black, threatened to bring him to his knees. She'd braided her hair over her head in her usual style, but atop it, a delicate tiara of glinting black stone rested, slender spikes jutting upward in a dark corona. Each spike was topped with a tiny sapphire, as if the spikes were so sharp they'd pierced the sky and drawn cobalt blood. And the dress. Silver thread embroidered the skin-tight velvet bodice, the straps so narrow they might as well have been nothing against her moon-white skin. The neckline plunged nearly to her navel, where the silver thread gathered to hold a small sapphire that matched the ones in her crown. The full skirts brushed the dark floor, rustling in the rippling silence. Nesta's chin remained high, accentuating her long, lovely neck. Her red-painted lips cocked in a feline smirk as her coal-lined eyes took in the room watching her every breath. Nesta seemed to glow with the attention, owned it, commanded it. Feyre and Rhys took their thrones, and Nesta and Elaine came to stand at the foot of the dais, between him and Azriel. Cassian didn't say a word to Nesta, or even glance at her. At the body on display, the body he'd tasted so many times now, it was a miracle no imprint of his lips lay against her neck. He didn't dare look at Eris either. One glance and it'd give away their entire game. Even her scent, his scent, Cassian knew with no small amount of satisfaction, had been carefully glamored to hide any trace of him. Feyre declared to the assembled crowd, "May the blessings of the winter solstice be upon you." Kier scuttled forward, bowing low.
"Allow me to extend my congratulations."
Cassian knew the bastard didn't mean a word of it. Eris stalked to his side, their honored guest.
"Allow me to extend mine as well, on behalf of my father and the entire Autumn Court."
He flashed Feyre a pretty, cultivated smile.
"He shall be thrilled by this news."
Rhys's mouth curled in a cruel half-smile, the stars winking out in his eyes.
"I'm sure he will."
There was no pretending tonight. Rhys truly was the High Lord of the Court of Nightmares, while Feyre and her babe were here. He'd slaughter anyone who threatened them, and enjoy it. Rhys said to no one in particular,
"Music."
An orchestra hidden in the screened-in mezzanine began playing. Feyre raised her voice and said, "Go, eat." The crowd undulated as people aimed for the tables. Only Eris and Kier remained before them. Neither spared more so much as a glance, though she smirked down at them, her red dress like a flame in the gloom of the hall. Cassian, in his black armor, felt more like the beasts carved into the towering pillars beneath this mountain. He'd brushed his hair and left it loose, and that had been the extent of his grooming for tonight. He'd spent most of his time thinking about how he'd like to peel Eris's skin off in tiny strips, how Rhys and Feyre had crossed a line by asking this of Nesta. He loved them both, but they could have found another way to ensure Eris's allegiance. Not that Cassian had come up with a better alternative. At least Briallen and Kosche had not yet acted further. though he had no doubt they'd be making their next move soon. Feyre commanded the crowd, her voice like thunder at midnight. Dance! People paired off and fell seamlessly into the music. Kyr went with them this time. Before you join the merriment, Eris, Rhys drawled, a long black box appearing in his hands, I'd like to present you with your solstice gift. Cassian kept his face blank. Rhys had gotten the bastard a gift? Rhys floated the box over to Eris on a night-kissed wind. Let enough of that wind remain wrapping behind Eris for Cassian to know it blocked him from sight, from Kyr's sight, specifically. Eris lifted his brows, flipping open the carved lid. He stiffened, voice going low. What is this? A present, Rhys said, and Cassian caught a glimpse of a familiar hilt in the box. The dagger Nesta had made. Cassian refrained from whirling on Rhys and Feyre, demanding to know what the hell they were thinking. Eris sucked in a breath. Feyre said, You can sense its power. There's flame in it, Eris said, not touching the dagger, as if his own magic warned him. He shut the lid, face slightly pale. Why give this to me?
You're our ally, Feyre said, a hand resting on her belly. You face enemies that exist outside of the usual rules of magic. It seemed only fair to give you a weapon that operates outside those rules, too.
This is truly made, then.
Cassian braced himself for the truth, the damning, dangerous truth to be revealed about Nesta. But Rhys said,
From my personal collection, a family heirloom. You possessed a made item and kept it hidden all these years? During the war?
Don't take our generosity for granted, Feyre warned Eris quietly. Eris stilled, but nodded. He extended the box back to Rhys.
I'll leave it in your keeping while I dance, then,
he added with what Cassian could have sworn was sincerity.
Thank you.
Feyre nodded as Rhys took the box and set it beside his throne. Use it well. She smiled softly at Eris. Ordinarily, I would ask you to dance, but my condition has left me unwell enough that I worry about what so much spinning would do to my stomach.
It was the truth.
Feyre had bolted from dinner 3 nights ago to find the nearest toilet. Now she made a show of looking between her two sisters. Elaine gave a passable impression of appearing interested. Nesta just looked bored, like they hadn't just given away the dagger she'd made. Perhaps it was because Nesta's eyes had drifted toward the dancing, shimmering throng, as if she couldn't help herself when the music swelled. She seemed to be half listening. Maybe music meant more to her than the dagger, more than magic and power. Feyre noted the direction of Nesta's stare. My oldest sister shall take my place. Nesta barely glanced to Eris, who pulled his assessing gaze from Elaine, to stare at the eldest Archeron sister, with a mix of wariness and intent that set Cassian's jaw grinding. Or it would have been grinding if he hadn't mastered himself in time to keep his face blank as Nesta began walking toward Eris. Eris offered an arm, and Nesta took it, her face neutral, her chin high, each step gliding. They halted at the edge of the dance floor, pulling apart to face each other. Others watched from the sidelines as the dance finished and the introductory strains of the next began. A harp strumming high and sweet. Eris extended a hand, a half smile on his mouth. As if those harp strings wrapped around Nesta's arm, she raised it and placed her hand in his precisely as the last swift pluck of the harp sounded. Percussion and horns blasted. Low-stringed instruments started a rushing stroke of music.
a summons to dance in a countdown to movement. Cassian reminded himself to breathe as Eris slid his broad hand over Nesta's waist, tucking her in close. She lifted her chin, looking up into his face as a deep-bellied drum thumped. And as the violins began their sweeping song, a beckoning back and forth, Nesta moved as if her very breath were timed to the music. Eris went with her, and it was clear that he knew the dance's nuances and exact notes. But Nesta, she gathered her skirts in her other hand, and as Eris led her into the waltz's opening movements, her body went loose and taut in so many different places, Cassian didn't know where to look. She was bent and shaped and directed by the sound. Even Eris's eyes widened at it. The sheer skill and grace, each movement of her body precisely tuned to each note and flutter of music, from her fingertips to the extension of her neck as she turned, the arch of her back into a held note. Cassian dared a glance at Feyre and Rhys, and found even their normally composed faces had gone a bit slack. By the time Nesta and Eris finished their first rotation through the dance floor, Cassian had the growing feeling that Elaine had rather undersold her sister's abilities. The music burned through Nesta. Had there ever been such a perfect half-wild sound in the world? Moore's memories on the Veritas were nothing compared to this. Hearing it performed live, dancing through it, it flowed and swam around her, filling her blood, and if she could have done so, she would have melted into the melody, become the rolling drums, the soaring violins, the clashing cymbals with the counterbeat, the horns and reeds with their high arcing song. There wasn't enough space inside her for the sound, for all it made her feel, not enough space in her mind, her heart, her body, and all she could do to honor it, worship it, was dance. Eris, to his credit, kept up. She held his eyes throughout each step, letting him feel her supple body, how pliant it was as she arched into a cluster of notes. His hand tightened on her, fingers digging into the groove of her spine, and she let a small smile rise to her red-painted lips. She had never worn such a color on her mouth. It looked like sin personified. But Moore had done it, along with the swoop of liquid coal over her upper eyelids. And when Nesta had looked in the mirror at last, she hadn't seen herself staring back. She'd seen a queen of the night, as merciless and cold and beautiful as the god Lanthus had wanted to make her. Death's consort. Death herself. Eris released her waist to spin her, and it was no effort to time her rotation to the flutter of notes, her gaze locking back to his exactly as the music returned to the melody. Flame simmered in his eyes, and he spun her again. Not a prescribed move in the dance, but she followed through, snapping her head around to meet his gaze once more, her skirts twirling. His lips curled with approval. His test passed. Nesta smirked back at him, letting her eyelids glitter. "Make him crawl," Moore had said, and she would. But first, she would dance. Cassian knew the waltz, had watched and danced it for centuries, knew its last half minute was a swift frenzy of notes and rising grand sound, knew most dancers would keep waltzing through it, but the brave ones, the skilled ones, would do the 12 spins. The female, blindly turning with one arm above her head, rotated again and again and again by her partner as they moved across the dance floor,
To spin was to risk looking the fool at best, to eat marble at worst. Nesta went for it, and Eris went with her, eyes blazing with feral delight. The music stomped into its crashing finale, drums striking, violins whirring, and the entire room straightened, eyes upon Nesta, this once human female who had conquered death, who now glowed as if she had devoured the moon, too. Between one beat and the next, Eris lifted Nesta's arm above her head and whipped her around with such force her heels rose off the ground. She'd barely finished the rotation when he spun her again, her head turning with such precision it took Cassian's breath away, and her feet, one spin after another, moving across the now empty dance floor like a night storm. Nesta's slipper-clad feet danced so fast they were a near blur. He knew that Eris turned her arm, but her feet held her, propelled them. It was she who led this dance. On the seventh spin, she twirled so swiftly she rose fully onto her toes. On the ninth spin, Eris released her fingers, and Nesta, arms still stretched above her head, rotated thrice more. Each one of the sapphires atop her tiara glimmered as if lit with an inner fire. Someone gasped nearby. It might have been Feyre. And as Nesta spun solo on the toes of one perfect foot, she smiled. Not a courtier's slick smile, not a coy one, but one of pure, wild joy brought by the music and the dance and her wholehearted yield to it. It was like seeing someone being born, like seeing someone come alive. By the time Nesta finished the last rotation, that absurd defiance of basic laws of movement and space, Eris had her hand again, spinning her three more times, his red hair glinting like fire, as if in echo to the unchecked, dark joy bursting from her. Nesta's mother had wanted a prince for her. Cassian now thought she'd undervalued her daughter. Only a king or an emperor would do for someone with that level of skill. She was seducing Eris within an inch of his life. The murmuring of the hewn city confirmed that Cassian wasn't the only one noting it. Eris's eyes gleamed with wanton desire as he drank in Nesta's smile, the glow about her. He knew what Nesta might become with a little ambition. The right guidance. If he learned that the Dread Trove answered to her, that she'd made his new dagger, it was a mistake to bring her here, to dangle her before Eris, the world. Emerging from her cocoon of grief and rage, this new Nesta might very well send entire courts to their knees. Kingdoms. The music rose and rose and rose, faster and faster and faster, and as its last few notes sounded, Eris again released her. Nesta spun solo once more, three more precise, perfect rotations as Eris dropped to a knee before her and held up a hand. The final note blasted and held, and Nesta halted with preternatural ease, taking Eris's hand in the same movement that her back arched, and she flung up her other arm, the portrait of triumph. The next dance began. And Nesta did not hesitate when Eris led her into it. It was a lighter, easier dance than the first, whose music had been a song in her blood. Her partner might be a monster, but he knew how to dance, had known how her body screamed to do those extra solo turns, and let her go free, not once but twice. And even then, it had not been enough. If she hadn't been wearing the heavy dress, she might have begged the orchestra to play the song again so she could just execute spin after spin after spin by herself, knowing when to throw in doubles and triples by instinct and ear alone. She was drunk on the music. But the second dance required no wild spinning or excess of emotion, as if the conductor of the orchestra hidden in his room wanted her to have a breather, or at least talk to her partner. Eris's amber eyes studied hers.
Trust Rhysand to keep you hidden away.
Right. She was to flatter him, keep him on their side. I just saw you the other week. Eris chuckled.
And as riveting as it was to see you send Tamlin scrambling off with his tail between his legs, I didn't see this side of you. The time since the war has changed you.
She didn't smile, but she met his stare directly as she said, for the better, I hope.
Certainly for the more interesting. It seems you came to play the game tonight after all.
Eris spun her, and when she returned to him, he murmured in her ear,
don't believe the lies they tell you about me.
She pulled back just enough to meet his gaze. Oh? Eris nodded to where Moore watched them from beside Farah and Rhys, her face neutral and aloof.
She knows the truth, but has never revealed it.
Why?
Because she's afraid of it.
You don't win yourself any favors with your behavior.
Don't I? Do I not ally myself with this court under constant threat of being discovered and killed by my father? Do I not offer aid whenever Rhysand wishes?
He spun her again.
They believe a version of events that is easier to swallow. I always thought Rhysand wiser than that. But he tends to be blind where those he loves are concerned.
Nesta's mouth twitched to one side. And you? Who do you love? His smile sharpened.
Are you inquiring after my eligibility?
I'm merely saying it's hard to find a good dance partner these days. Eris laughed, the sound like silk over her skin. She shivered.
Indeed it is, especially one who can both dance and tear the King of Hybern's head from his shoulders.
She let him see a bit of that person. See the savage rage and silver fire he'd witnessed before Tamlin. Then she blinked and it was gone. Eris's face tightened, and not from fear. He twirled her again, the waltz already coming to a close. He whispered in her ear,
they say your sister Elaine is the beauty, but you outshine her tonight.
His hand stroked down the bare skin of her back, and she arched slightly into the touch. Nesta made her throat bob, let a hint of color rise to her cheeks. The waltz finished, and they seamlessly fell into the next dance, a little more demanding this time. She remembered this one from her lesson with Moore. It was lovely and sweeping, and like being in a dream, until its final minute became so grand it always knocked the breath from her.
Anticipation thrummed through her, brightening her eyes. You're wasted at the night court,
Eris murmured as she twirled, skirts enveloping the two of them.
Absolutely wasted.
I'm not sure that's a compliment. Another chuckle. Motion lurked at the corner of her eye, but she didn't break her stare from Eris's, didn't halt her steps until,
move.
Cassian's cold voice crackled through the spell of the music, halting her. He stood before them, amid the sea of people twirling around and around, and even though most wore black, his armor and blades made him seem different, like a true piece of the night. Eris looked down his straight nose at Cassian.
I don't take orders from brutes.
Nesta stifled her snarl and said coolly to Cassian, am I to understand that you would like to dance with me?
Yes.
His hazel eyes were burning with violence. Had he really believed what he'd seen on this dance floor? Eris bared his teeth at Cassian.
Go sit at your master's feet, dog.
It took all her concentration, every moment of mind stilling, to keep from ripping out Eris's throat. But Nesta shoved her fury down to the place where she'd shifted her power. No one likes a selfish partner, Eris. She didn't so much as look at Cassian, didn't trust what she'd do if she beheld pain in his eyes at Eris's insult. Feyre and Rhysand had given Eris one of her blades just to ensure his continued alliance. She wouldn't jeopardize it. So she added with a croon, time to share. Eris threw her a mocking smile.
We'll play later, Nesta Archeron.
He ignored Cassian as he aimed for the dais again. Alone with Cassian, the packed dance floor teeming around them, Nesta demanded, are you happy now? His face was like stone.
No.
A glance over his shoulder showed her a tight-faced Rhys and Feyre, who were undoubtedly shouting at him, mind to mind. But if she and Cassian lingered like this for too long, the spell she'd woven around Eris might be disrupted, and Cassian offered up his hand, swallowed once. He was nervous. This male who had faced down enemy armies, who had battled to the brink of death more times than she cared to count, who had fought so many dangers it was a miracle he lived. He was nervous. It softened some crucial piece of her, and Nesta slipped her hand into his, their calluses rasping against each other. His hand slid around her waist, so large it spanned nearly halfway across. She gathered her skirts and lifted her gaze to his. Nesta fell back a step, leading him, them, into the dance. And Cassian went with her. He was not graceful like Eris. He did not instinctively move to each beat like she did. But he kept up, willing to follow her into the music, into the sound and the movement. And his eyes would not leave her face. Their steps quickened, and Cassian found his rhythm. He spun her, and she whipped herself around, his arms waiting to catch her. His hand on her waist tightened, his only warning as he launched them further, faster into the music. Cassian smiled at her, and the world faded away. The music was no longer the most beautiful thing in existence. He was. Nesta couldn't stop it then. The answering smile that bloomed through her at last, stealing across her face, bright as the dawn. Cassian would only yield Nesta to Asriel, who swept her into a waltz as easy as breathing. Wandering over to the wine table to pour himself a goblet, Cassian met the eyes of a few courtiers gawking at Nesta, and let them see what would happen if they so much as approached her. They quickly fell away, and he leaned against a pillar, content to watch Nesta dance with his brother. Moore was at his side a moment later, her lips curving upward. Looks like our lessons paid off. Cassian kissed her cheek.
I owe you one.
They'd been training in secret these past weeks. Moore had been positively giddy when he'd asked her for help, but her eyes were dark now, her face wan.
How are you doing?
He asked neutrally, well aware of the people around them. What Moore had been and was now to them. Moore lifted one shoulder, then let it drop. Fine. She nodded to Nesta. I enjoyed seeing what she did. She elbowed him in the ribs. Though I suppose you didn't. You just had to cut in, didn't you? He crossed his arms.
Rhys can deal with it.
It seems Rhys is. Moore said.
and Cassian followed her stare toward the dais, where Eris stood beside the thrones, speaking with Rhys and Feyre. Without Rhys so much as blinking in their direction, Cassian found that Rhys had let him in on the conversation. He was inside Rhys's mind, seeing and hearing the conversation through Rhys's eyes. From Moore's sudden stillness, he knew she'd been brought in, too.
All right,
Eris was saying to Rhys, sliding his hands into his pockets.
You showed me what I can have, Rhysand. I'm intrigued enough to ask what you'd want in return.
Feyre blurted into Rhys's thoughts.
What?
Cassian wanted to echo the same, his entire body tightening, but Rhys didn't move from where he lounged on his throne.
What do you mean by that?
Lust glazed Eris's eyes. Covetous, calculating lust. Cassian swallowed his growl.
I mean that whatever you want, I'll give it to you in exchange for her, as my bride.
He jerked his chin to the box with the dagger at Rhys's feet.
I'd rather have her than that.
He danced 3 dances with her,
Feyre squawked. Rhys's lips seemed to be fighting a losing battle not to smile. Cassian could only stare at Eris's throat, pondering whether to strangle him or slit the skin wide open. Let him bleed on the floor.
That's not my decision,
Rhys said calmly to Eris.
And it seems foolish for you to offer me anything I want in exchange for her anyway.
His jaw tightened.
I have my reasons.
From the shadows in his eyes, Cassian knew something more lay beneath the rash offer, something that even Az's spies hadn't picked up on at the Autumn Court. All it would take was one push of Rhys's power into his mind, and they'd know. But
it went against everything they stood for, at least amongst their allies.
Rhys demanded their trust.
He had to give it in return. Cassian couldn't fault his brother for that.
Eris added,
It is a bonus, of course, that in doing so, I would be repaying Cassian for ruining my betrothal to Morrigan.
Asshole. Cassian's hands curled into fists, but Moore's fingers landed on his arm, gentle and reassuring.
Can't we throw him to the beasts under the cell and be done with him?
Feyre seethed to Rhys. Again, Rhys's lips twitched.
So bloodthirsty,
Cassian heard his high lord croon to his mate. But Rhys said,
Anything I want, whether it be armies from the Autumn Court or your firstborn, you would grant me in exchange for Nesta Archeron as your wife.
Cassian growled low in his throat. His brother was letting this carry on too far. Eris glared.
Not as far as the firstborn, but yes, Rhysand. You want armies against Briallen and my father? You'll have them.
His lips curved upward.
I couldn't very well let my wife's sister go into battle unaided, could I?
You can return every solstice present in exchange for letting me tear him apart, Feyre said. Cassian clamped his mouth shut to avoid shouting his agreement toward them. But Rhys, the bastard, silently laughed. His face remained stone cold as he said,
I'll consider it, and talk to Nesta. Keep the dagger, though. You might need it.
Cassian glanced to Azriel and Nesta, still beautifully waltzing. It didn't spark one ember of his temper. But Eris, ally or not, he'd make sure the prick got what was coming to him. Chapter 58. Nesta had stood here once before. A year before, actually. A different house in a different part of this city, but she had stood outside while the others celebrated the winter solstice within, and felt like a ghost looking in through a window. Ice crusted the sidra behind the house, the lawn sloping down to it winter white, but evergreen garlands and wreaths decorated the river house, the epitome of merry warmth.
"Stop scowling," Cassian said. "It's a party, not a funeral."
She glared, but he opened the front door to a riot of music and laughter. She hadn't slept with him after the ball or since. He'd looked inclined when they'd returned to the House of Wind, but she'd simply said she was tired and had gone to her own room. Because as soon as that music had faded and the dance had stopped, she'd realized how stupidly she'd been smiling at him, how low those walls in her mind had dropped. Eris had danced with her twice more after Asriel, and he'd had such intent in his eyes, she knew she'd woven her spell around him as well. He'd bid for her, she'd learned with no small amount of smugness. Nesta left it to Rhysand and Feyre to decide how to wield that offer. Instead, she'd focused on training, gave herself over to it. The sessions had been halted through the holiday, but she'd gone up to the ring the next morning to practice anyway, punching the wood beam vigorously to work out her roaring thoughts. Now she followed Cassian into the river house, where he immediately aimed for the family room, shucking off his snow-crusted cloak and dropping it onto a bench in the grand foyer on the way. Nesta frowned at the dripping snow on the brocaded material and picked it up, eager for anything to do with herself to avoid going into that room. She unfastened her own cloak, scanning the hall for a coat closet or rack, and found the former tucked under the stair archway. She hung both garments there and heaved a long breath as she shut the door. "You came," Elaine said behind her, and Nesta started, not having heard her sister approach. She scanned Elaine from head to toe, wondering if she'd been taking lessons in stealth, either from Asriel or the two half-wraiths she called friends. Gone was the ill-suited black dress from the ball, replaced by a gown of amethyst velvet, her hair half up and curling down to her waist. She glowed with good health, except her brown eyes were wary. Usually that look was reserved for Lucian. The male was definitely in the family room, since Nesta knew Feyre and Rhys had invited him. But for that look to be directed at her? They hadn't spoken of their argument in the few minutes they'd had together before the ball's procession, and then she'd avoided Elaine entirely until the event was over. She didn't know what she'd say, how to make it right. Nesta cleared her throat. "Cassian said it might be good if I came." Elaine's eyes flickered. "Did Feyre pay you like last year?"
"No."
Shame washed through her. Elaine sighed, glancing over Nesta's shoulder to the open doorway across the entry. The party within only for their small inner circle. "Please don't upset Feyre. It's her birthday, first of all. And in her state—"
"Oh, fuck you!" Nesta snapped, and then choked.
Elaine blinked. Nesta blinked back, horror lurching through her. And then Elaine burst out laughing, howling, half-sobbing laughs that sent her bending over at the waist, gasping for breath. Nesta just stared, torn between questions and wanting to throw herself into the icy sidra.
I'm so sorry.
Elaine held up a hand, wiping her eyes with the other. "You've never said such a thing to me," she laughed again. "I think that's a good sign, isn't it?" Nesta shook her head slowly, not understanding. Elaine just linked her arm through Nesta's and led her toward the family room, where Asriel stood in the doorway monitoring them, as if he'd heard Elaine's sharp laugh and wondered what had caused it.
"I was just checking on dessert," Elaine explained as they approached the doorway and Asriel.
Nesta met the Shadow Singer's stare, and he gave her a nod. Then his gaze shifted to Elaine, and though it was utterly neutral, something charged went through it, between them. Elaine's breath caught slightly, and she gave him a shallow nod of greeting before brushing past, leading Nesta into the room. Moor lounged on a green velvet couch before the fireplace. Amryn sat in Varian's lap on the matching couch opposite her. Feyre beside them, hand on her belly. Rhys sprawled in an armchair, and Cassian occupied a second armchair, with Lucian leaning against it, arguing with them about something that seemed related to a sporting event. Nesta had tried to convince Emery and Gwyn to join her, but both had refused. Emery had said she was obligated to visit her horrible family, and Gwyn merely said she wasn't ready to leave the library to go farther than the training ring. So here Nesta was, alone, with the same group she'd dealt with last year, when they'd watched her sit sullen as a child in the back of the townhouse living room, then storm out. Feyre smiled at her, glowing with health and life. But Nesta's gaze snagged on Amryn. The female did not so much as look her way. Varian did, and he threw her a wary glance that said enough. No, Amryn wouldn't speak to her. Her chest tightened, but Cassian beckoned her over. He rose from his seat, offering it to her, even though there were a dozen more in the room. Sit, he said. Do you want some peppermint tea? She knew they all watched her, hated that they did, and understood why, too. But she nodded at Cassian and sat, saying to Feyre, Happy birthday. Feyre smiled again. Thank you. And that was that. Nesta ignored the collective sense of relief that filled the room and pivoted, finding herself peering up at Lucian, who greeted her with a wary dip of his chin. Elaine, the wretch, had taken the seat between Feyre and Varian, about as far from Lucian as she could get. Azriel remained in the doorway. How's the spring court? Nesta asked. The fire crackled merrily to her right, and she let the sound ripple through and past her. Acknowledging the crack and what it did to her had released it, even as she concentrated on the male she'd addressed. Lucian's jaw tightened.
How you'd expect.
Tension rippled through the room, confirmation that Tamlin had heard the news of Feyre's pregnancy. From Lucian's grim face, she knew he hadn't reacted well. Nesta said, And Jurian and Vasa?
At each other's throats, as they like to be,
he said, a tad sharply, and she wondered what that was about, and for the life of her, couldn't read it. Lucian asked, sipping his tea,
How's the training?
She gave him a smile, a true one. Good. We're learning how to disembowel a male. Lucian choked on his drink, nearly spewing it onto her head. Cassian appeared, a cup of tea steaming in his hands, and passed it to her before he declared proudly to Lucian,
As you'd expect, Ness excels at it.
Moor lifted her glass in a mockery of a toast. My favorite part of training. Nesta frowned. We haven't cut the ribbon yet, though. Moor's brows bunched. So you really are learning Valkyrie techniques? Nesta nodded. They'd been so busy during their dancing lessons that the details of training hadn't come up. Moor grinned. You mind if I start joining you once this business with Valahan is over? I never got to train with the Valkyries before the First War, and after it they were all gone. I think the priestesses would like to see you, Nesta said, and glanced to Cassian to make sure he didn't mind. He waved a hand. Moor's grin turned fiendish. Good. I also want to make sure Cassian actually wears his present to practice.
Gods, spare me.
Cassian groaned, and Nesta's stomach twisted. She hadn't bought them anything, hadn't bought him anything. She'd said as much before he'd flown her down here, and he hadn't cared, but she cared. She cradled her tea, and the conversation wended around her. But she managed to tuck that dread away, at least for now. Managed to participate. Asriel lingered near the door, quiet enough that when Feyre and Moore began talking about some of her paintings, Nesta went over to him. "Why don't you sit?" She leaned against the doorway beside the shadow singer.
"My shadows don't like the flames so much."
A pretty lie. She'd seen Asriel before the fire plenty, but she looked at who sat close to it and knew the answer. "Why did you come if it torments you so much?"
"Because Rhys wants me here. It'd hurt him if I didn't come."
"Well, I think holidays are stupid."
"I don't."
She arched a brow. He explained,
"They pull people together and bring them joy. They're a time to pause and reflect and gather, and those are never bad things."
Shadows darkened his eyes, full of enough pain that she couldn't stop herself from touching his shoulder, letting him see that she understood why he stood in the doorway, why he wouldn't go near the fire. His secret to tell, never hers. Asriel's face remained neutral, so Nesta gave him a small nod and walked back to the fray, taking a seat on the rolled arm of the nearest couch. An hour passed before Moore began grousing about opening presents. Rhys snapped his fingers and a heap of them appeared. Cassian braced himself for whatever awful gift Moore had gotten him and glanced to Nesta. He'd kept her present in his pocket, saving it to give her in private later. He'd done the same last year, and the damn thing had ended up at the bottom of the Sidra, probably swept out to sea. He'd spent months tracking down the book so tiny it would fit in a doll's hands, but so precious it had cost him an indecent amount of money. A miniature illuminated manuscript crafted by the skilled hands of the smallest of the lesser fae. One of the first printed books in existence. It hadn't been meant for reading, but he'd figured that someone who adored books as much as Nesta would savor this piece of history, even if she resented all things fae. He'd regretted throwing it into the river the moment it had vanished under the ice, but he'd been foolish that night. This year, he prayed it was different. It felt different. Nesta had been better tonight than last year, another person entirely. She hadn't laughed freely like Moore and Feyre, or smiled sweetly like Elaine, but she spoke and engaged and sometimes smirked. She saw everything, heard everything, even the fire, which she seemed to ignore. Pride filled his chest at that, and relief. It had only increased when he'd noticed that she'd cared enough about Az's aloofness to go up to him to chat. Only Amran ignored her, and Nesta ignored Amran. The tension between them was a living band of lightning. But no one said anything, and they seemed content to pretend the other didn't exist. No one offered gifts for the baby, as it went against Fae tradition to do so before a babe was born, fearful of calling bad luck by counting one's blessings too soon. But Feyre's birthday gifts were bountiful, perhaps glaringly so. Cassian's gifts were the usual odd medley, an ancient manuscript on warfare from Rhys, a bag of beef jerky from Asriel.
"I literally couldn't think of anything you'd enjoy more,"
Az had said when Cassian had laughed, and a hideously ugly green sweater from Moore that made his skin look jaundiced. Amran had given him a travel set of spices,
so you don't have to suffer when you're in Illyria.
And Elaine gave him a specially designed ceramic mug with a lid that he could travel with, bespelled against breaking. to keep tea warm for hours. Feyre gave him a painting which he opened in private and had to fight back tears before he hid it behind the chair. A portrait of him, Asriel, and Rhys, standing atop Ramiel after the blood rite. Bloody and bruised and filthy, faces filled with grim triumph, their hands linked as they touched them to the monolith at its peak. She must have looked into Rhys's mind for the image. Cassian had kissed her cheek, her shield down for the moment, and murmured his thanks, as if that would cover it. He'd cherish the painting for the rest of his life. He and Lucian did not exchange gifts, though the male had brought a gift for Feyre and one for his mate, who barely thanked him after opening the pearl earrings. Cassian's heart strained at the pain etching deep into Lucian's face as he tried to hide his disappointment and longing. Elaine only shrank further into herself, no trace of that newfound boldness to be seen. Cassian could feel Nesta watching him, but when he looked, her face was unreadable. No one had gotten her presence, except for Feyre and Elaine, who had together given her a year's worth of book-buying credit to her favorite bookshop in the city. It was capped at around 300 books, which they seemed to think would be more than she could read in a year. 500 books worth would have been a safer bet, he knew. But then Asriel approached her. Nesta had blinked at the gift the Shadow Singer set in her lap. I didn't get you anything, she murmured to Az, her cheeks turning rosy. I know, he said, smiling. I don't mind. Cassian tried to focus on the present in his hands, the silver comb and brush set he'd gotten more, engraved with her name. But his gaze snagged on Nesta's fingers as she opened the small box. She peered at what was inside, then looked at Asriel in confusion. What is it? Asriel plucked up the small folded silver wand within and unfurled it. One end held a clip, the other a small glass sphere. You can attach this to whatever book you're reading, and the little ball of fey light will shine, so you don't have to squint when you're reading at night. Nesta touched the glass ball, no bigger than her thumbnail, and fey light flickered within, casting a bright, easy glow upon her lap. She tapped it again, and it turned off. And then she jumped to her feet and flung her arms around Asriel. The room went silent for a beat. But Asriel chuckled and squeezed her gently. Cassian smiled to see it, to see them. Thank you, Nesta said, quickly pulling away to marvel at the device. It's brilliant. Asriel blushed and stepped back, shadows swirling. Nesta looked over to Cassian, and that light was once more in her eyes, enough that he almost gave her his gift there and then. But considering how last year's attempt had gone, considering that since the ball she'd stayed out of his bed, he held back, in case she shattered his heart all over again. By 1 a.m, Nesta's eyes ached with exhaustion. The others were still drinking, but she hadn't been offered any wine, or wanted any for that matter. She had not joined them in their singing and dancing, though she had helped herself to thirds of Feyre's ridiculously large pink birthday cake. Cassian had said they were going to stay here tonight, as he'd be too drunk to fly them back to the House of Wind, and Mor and Asriel would be too drunk to winnow them, not to mention that he'd still have to fly them the last bit of the way. Rhys and Feyre would likely be enjoying each other by the time they were all ready to leave. The door Feyre had directed her to was already open. Fey lights glowing inside the opulent bedroom bedecked in whites and creams and tans. Candles flickered in glass jars on the marble mantel. The curtains were already down for the night, heavy swathes of blue velvet, the only pop of color in the room, along with a few blue trinkets. It was soothing and smelled of jasmine, precisely the sort of room she'd have designed for herself if she'd been given the chance. She had been given the chance, she realized. Feyre had asked and she'd refused. Apparently, Feyre had done it herself, somehow knowing what she'd like. Nesta sat at the small vanity, staring at her reflection in the quiet. Her door opened with a creak, and then Cassian was there, leaning against her doorway, gazing at her in the mirror.
You didn't want to say goodnight?
Her heart began thundering. I was tired.
You've been tired for a few nights now.
He crossed his arms.
What's going on?
Nothing. She twisted on the cushioned stool of the vanity. Why aren't you downstairs?
You never asked about your present.
I assumed I wasn't getting one from you. He pushed off the doorframe and shut the door behind him. He took up all the air in the room just by standing there.
Why?
She shrugged. I just did. He pulled a small box from his jacket and set it on the bed between them.
Surprise.
Cassian swallowed as she approached, the only sign that this meant something to him. Nesta's hands turned sweaty as she picked the box up, examining it.
She didn't open it yet, though.
I'm sorry for how I behaved last solstice, for how awful I was.
He'd gotten her a present then, too, and she hadn't cared. Had been so wretched she'd wanted to hurt him for it, for caring. I know, he said thickly. I forgave you a long time ago.
She still couldn't look at him, even as he said, open it. Her hands shook a little as she did, finding a silver ball nestled in the black velvet box. It was the size of a chicken egg, round save for one area that had been flattened so it might be set upon a surface and not roll. What is it?
Touch the top, just a tap.
Throwing a puzzled glance at him, she did so. Music exploded into the room. Nesta leaped back, a hand at her chest as he laughed. But music was playing from the silver orb, and not just any music, but the waltzes from the ball the other night, pure and free of any crowd chattering, as if she were sitting in a theater to hear them. This isn't the Veritas orb, she managed to say, as the waltz poured out of the ball, so clear and perfect her blood sang again.
No, it's a symphonia, a rare device from Helion's court. It can trap music within itself and play it back for you. It was originally invented to help compose music, but it never caught on for some reason.
How did you get the crowd noise out when you trapped the sound the other night? She marveled. His cheeks stained with color.
I went back the next day, asked the musicians at the Hewn City to play it all again for me, plus some other of their favorites.
He nodded to the ball.
And then I went to some of your favorite taverns and found those musicians and had them play.
He trailed off at her bowed head, the tears she couldn't stop. She didn't try to fight them as the music poured into the room. He had done all this for her, had found a way for her to have music, always.
Nesta, he breathed.
She shut her eyes against the realization rising within her like a tidal wave. It would sweep away everything in its path once she admitted it, consume her entirely. The thought was enough for her to straighten and wipe away her tears. I can't accept this.
It was made for you.
He smiled softly. She couldn't bear that smile, his kindness and joy, as she corrected. I will not accept it. She placed the orb back in its box and handed it to him. Return it. His eyes shuddered.
It's a gift, not a fucking wedding ring.
She stiffened. No, I'll look to Eris for that. He went still.
Say that again.
She made her face cold, the only shield she had against him.
Rhys says Eris wants me as his bride. He'll do anything we want in exchange for my hand.
The siphons atop Cassian's hands flickered.
You aren't considering saying yes.
She said nothing, let him believe the worst. He snarled.
I see. I get a little too close and you shove me away again, back to where it's safe. Better to marry a viper like Eris than be with me.
I'm not with you, she snapped. I am fucking you.
The only thing fit for a bastard-born brute, right?
I didn't say that.
You don't need to. You've said it 1,000 times before.
Then why did you bother to cut in at the ball?
Because I was fucking jealous,
he roared, wings splaying.
You looked like a queen, and it was painfully obvious that you should